So this is Katie Hunter for MMA UK. I'm excited to say that I'm here with Paddy the Hooligan, Houlihan. Paddy, thank you so much for doing this.
No problem.
Paddy, I was a massive fan of yours before, but since reading your book, it's just given me a whole deeper connection to everything you've been through in your life. It's just fascinating. I'll do a proper plug at the end, but I'll just urge everybody to put it on their Christmas list. Anyone watching this is going to be an MMA fan. Like, they've got to get it. I think I always knew what a huge fan favourite you are, but I don't think I truly appreciated how much you must mean to the people of your hometown and the people of Dublin and the people of Ireland.
Yeah, the Irish fans are definitely the best fans in the world. There's no saying, whether it comes to football, whether it comes to fighting, we support all of our athletes, which is a great thing. The recognition of Irish MMA is kind of on the cusp now. Hopefully it happens soon enough, but that would definitely solidify the future of it to go forward. So other people could follow in the footsteps that we did. But it's very nice to be respected in Ireland. And we have a thing in Ireland called folklore, which is kind of like the history of stories of heroes. And as you die, your folklore grows bigger and bigger. So hopefully when it comes to the end, there was 100,000 people in that tree arena that night or the TD Garden or something. So the story grows, as they say.
I'm sure it sounded like it to you.
To me, I was totally in the zone walking out that door, and I was, even when I look back at photos, I'm slightly perfect between nervous, focus, and like really determined. So when I turned up to a fight like that, and you know in the dressing room, a fighter knows, and that's kind of what the book is about as well. It's probably the first insight of giving people the idea of what it really feels like, what it's like to be a fighter. We're just humans too, you know.
Yeah. I just want to pull a few bits out of the book. I don't want to spoil it for anyone, but like, I just want to give people a flavour of what's in there. I've made some notes because I don't want to miss anything. But there's a moment in the book where you talk about you're driving down the road on the way to a fight, and you're worried about this guy who's a leg locking expert, and you know you could be walking out of there with a broken leg, and you just think to yourself, I could just drive the car off the road here, and you're powering up the motorway, having that thought. And it just really reminded me of, you know, what Darren Till said recently about, I think I could fake an injury and I won't have to go out there. Like, it's amazing that, you know, fighters have these thoughts.
We all have these thoughts, not just fighters. It's are these thoughts when you get, it's very easy for a fighter to say, okay, I'll take a fight at 8 weeks notice. That's easy. And then they post it on their Instagram and then it feels great. The separation starts as it gets closer to your fight. Now, to me, in that situation, I think I was more trying to like feel alive more than anything else. But I just, you're in such a moment when you're going towards something like that. That's part of it when you look back, that the part of that you actually enjoy, weirdly. Because when you look back at it, you're like, it'd be like climbing Everest. I'm pretty sure when you're halfway up, you're saying, what am I doing here? Freezing. What the fuck? You know, so when it comes back to the situation, like fighting, it could be very similar to your, you don't enjoy every moment of Everest, but every moment you look back on, the moments come back. And when I was writing the book, or I was walking through the idea of driving to the arena that night, which is in my hometown. It's the National Basketball Arena. It was kind of like, this was where like at the heart of kind of a start beating in Dublin for me, definitely. And driving towards there, all your friends and your family's there, and you're going to fight a guy that usually ends a fight in 30 seconds. And the thing I remember about that fight is that if he did win, the crowd wouldn't know how. It's not like a knockout. It's one of no one understands the intricates of it looking in. Everyone comes up, you come out, it's a big wave. I remember this feeling and then saying, this could just, and people would be looking at each other saying, what happened?
Yeah.
And if you look at the fight, people have went back and looked at the fight. It is that exchange. It starts straight away and it can end in 30 seconds. And he did it to some high level guys. So driving there, I wanted to just be senses to be sharp or something. So I just remember turning out onto that M50 road and, Florence.
And you'd already gone through quite a lot in the lead up to actually getting in the car and going to that fight, because John Kavanagh had kind of put a thing on your head. He was offering a month's free membership and a free T-shirt to anyone who could get you in a leg lock prior to the fight.
Yeah, I think that was like an extra motivation. And it worked, definitely worked. It was like an extra motivation to keep your legs inside the vehicle if you must at times when you're rolling. Don't have them hanging off the side of people's hips. Don't be sitting there in closed guard. Use butterfly hooks. Keep your feet on the hips. That type of stuff there to start. Don't get caught in clinches and overhooks exchanges. And there was a few rules and definitely, yeah, that the team support and the coaching in that situation definitely got me through that as well.
Or maybe they just wanted the free membership.
Yeah. I would have been for a footlock myself if I had been able to counterfeit in some way. Get my own free membership out of it. Or split up with somebody.
Another really poignant bit in the book for me was your whole experience with The Ultimate Fighter. I've never quite thought about, you know, that lead up to it. I've definitely never thought about the fact that you were stuck in a hotel room for how many days it was. I can't remember, but
I think it's like 3 or 4 days, three and a half days or something.
Literally not able to leave the room.
No, you can't leave the room.
How do you not crack up, especially for you? All of your family and friends are a different time zone to you.
Mental. Like, it's a crazy thing to go through. But like, listen, when we start fighting and people know that there's, if you get to the level where we got to, you weren't making crazy money before the UFC. So you had to love it. So that's what we are there for. And as I said, some people are humans that do all sorts of stuff like ride motorbikes and do like horse riding and become jockeys and all sorts of stuff that I'm like, I don't know how somebody could do that. So I understand. But I know for the fact that them guys weren't always getting paid and as well. So going through something like that is like you're looking back. And I remember at the time, it's a dark place to be before you go and fight somebody in a cage in a warehouse. When you put it, you know, when you break it down a little bit, that's the human way of looking at it. But it's what you've got to do, you know, as well.
Yeah. And I heard you described on your podcast that it's a little bit like the X Factor auditions where you're just on the actual day, you're just waiting around for like 18 hours to do your bit and impress the judges. Yeah. How was that?
Well, mine was probably probably bigger than the average one, because there was it was the first time females were being introduced to the Ultimate Fighter, so which was great. So it was the first time that there was this big mix of male and female contestants. So, but when you walk in, it's like it's crazy, you know. There's people dressed up as like in full night gear, and people that are like 80, 90 kilo trying out for bantamweight. You're like, mate, you're not a bantamweight. No, I can't. Once back in 92, I made bantamweight. And it's like, you know, so like even English fighter Davey Grant. So Davey Grant was there when I was at the Ultimate Fighter, and he was dressed in a full Jerry Halliwell outfit, boots and everything. And Davey's a great man, he is. Michael Wooten was there as well. It was a crazy bit of a situation. There was a lot of people and it took a long time. But like, I couldn't understand Davey. I was like, listen, I want it, mate, but I don't Jerry Halliwell want it.
You obviously had to borrow money to get there. You were successful in getting through. And then the way you described losing the first fight in The Ultimate Fighter, I just felt distraught for you.
The amount of people, we only see the cream. In anything, in the X Factor, in all of these things as well. So when I look at shows on telly, and my girlfriend loves reality TV shows, but I know what the film goes into this, and I look at it and I see a different kind of angle of it. So like say this celebrity get me out of here and stuff like that. Looking in, I can't help but see the other side of it, the cameraman and what he's telling him to, you know. And so there's a bit of effort that goes into that, and there's a Celebrity Love Island. I'm not against all these things. I don't care. I'm not like this old man now, but I understand the psychological damage that goes into a reality TV show. And for what? Yeah. For fame or for money or for free shit.
Yeah. And obviously straight after that, you were experiencing extreme problems with your back. Some of the things I was reading were just breaking my heart for you, like when you had to sleep standing up because it was just too painful even to lay on the floor at one point. And the bit you describe in the book where you, your back just locked up and you were with your son and you fell over in a field and then it was pissing with rain. And
typical Ireland.
Oh my gosh, it was just, we hear all the time that fighters are always injured and they're still training with injuries and they're fighting with injuries. But just to hear it like that, it just really brought it home to me, what fighters go through.
It's a fairly human element there. Like, fighters are husbands and they dads as well. And like, when this element is going on, it's like, we have family watching on as well, you know? So it's a, and it's very easy to see a fighter getting slated online for not winning, you know? And sometimes in the heat of the moment, people do things as well. And it's like, there's no human element in other people. A fighter goes to work, and if you win, you get your full check. If you lose, you get half of a check. That's a hard life to be living, you know? So, and when the human part comes into it, then you've got to make sure that you're presentable and that you like, sometimes my fighters, you know, you can lose the head.
Not to steal Joe Rogan's lines, but I do find that tough with fighters getting the show money and the win money when they're putting just as much into winning that fight, especially if it goes to a decision and it might not even be the right one.
I think the worst part about that is because coming from, say, someone that would have had much growing up, and you're handed, say, a check for $10,000 and you're still a little bit sad. I'm kind of sad that I'm not happy. It's still $10,000, but yeah. I know that should be more, you know, when you're going through that. Now, that would have been kind of like at the start of a career. It was never $10,000, so I'm lying. But the UFC do look after fighters, and they're the highest paying, which would be, to me, they look after fighters in the idea of when you travel, your gear, and it is a well-oiled machine when you get there. And it's the idea of, I do believe in building the product as well. It's like, if you think about football, if you think about NFL, not the whole team doesn't get paid the exact same. The superstars, the quarterback, the Messi, the Ronaldo. So even though you get there, It's up to you as well to bring something to the table that fans want to connect to, and that's important. Some people just moan.
Yeah, that's true.
You have to have
another big issue in the sport is weight cuts, and you touch on that in the book. Obviously, after doing Tough, you told Dana that actually I'm a flyweight. Let me in as a flyweight. So then you had to get yourself to 125 pounds and you talk about going temporarily blind.
That was it. It's a heavy experience, the weight cut. And I think the best way to do is to actually read about that part, because it's heavy and everyone has their own story with it, you know. But weight cutting is, it's not a fun part. At the start, when you're looking at Rocky and all, it kind of seems like a fun part, but it's probably the most miserable part, and hopefully it disappears in the future.
People definitely need to read that part because they need to learn about coconut water and when not to drink it as well.
Perfect, absolutely.
The Smoker fight, obviously your last fight for the UFC, just you're able to describe that in such detail. It's beautifully written. I don't know I've forgotten the name of the guy who wrote it with you.
Richie Barrett, it is. So Richie Barrett of Pundit Arena was who linked in with me to write the book. And Richie's from Cork, I'm from Dublin. So a lot of the language we had to definitely go through with each other, because but Richie's an amazing writer. But I think that helped with the detail of it, because I was watching to make sure I didn't sound like a Cork lad in it, because Cork people speak like this, boy, you know. So I was like, I'm making sure, Richie, don't make me sound like a Cork lad. No, but I couldn't have done it without him. He was amazing help, he really was. And when I first met him and we started really talking through the story, the two was kind of, even I was like, that's powerful, like when you put it like that.
Tapping into those emotions before that fight, the way you just knew in the dressing room that something felt off, The warm up wasn't right. The walkout it was powerful is the word for it. And I can't imagine. I was absolutely gutted for you at the time, but I think I was more gutted reading the book, even though I knew what happened.
The show must go on. That's the way it goes. And you don't get a day off. That's not the way it works. You're not able to say, do you know what? I don't feel well today. Don't turn in. It doesn't work like that. But crazy thing is about that is that there's that whole kind of situation there is in two books. It's in John's book and it's in my book. And it's these moments are now turning into books and into there's a great Irish saying that saying every story brings its story.
Yeah.
And it's amazing that, like, thinking back at that now, when people read back at that and they see the idea of what actually is the emotional, the human part of it when you're going out, it's not easy, you know?
And then after that, you needed to have work done on your injuries and you ended up having to come clean about your blood disorder. I can't imagine what it's like to have your career snatched away from you, how scary it is, and how, you know, you say all the way through the book that fighting and martial arts is what changed your life.
It'd be like being a doctor, someone coming in one day and saying, you're not a doctor anymore. And that's kind of what it feels like. You put as much time as you do into being a doctor as you do as to being a fighter, probably more, and definitely less paid. So, yeah, it's one of them situations. I still miss fighting. The situation that comes about is, as I said, is I have to keep referring to say you have to read the book we'd be here all night if we were going through it. So it's one of them things when it comes about, and it's not getting your career taken away from you. I think even as a kid, if you're playing football and stuff like that, trying to getting too old and stuff is a worrying thing, I think, for any young boy or girl growing up. So when it does happen, it's kind of it's a kick in the teeth.
Had you ever imagined in your head when you were going to retire, or had it not even crossed your mind?
I'm still young. I'm 31, so I could, like, if you had Damien Maia, I was still choking guys out. And that I won't say my style is like Damien Maia, but it kind of is in a way. It's grappling stuff. You know, it's pressure. It's wearing people down. It's jiu-jitsu. So I think that style lasts longer in MMA. You know, so I think who knows? And the older you get, the wiser you get. So even as a fighter, so. Yeah, but listen, I have a great team coming up now. We have someone that just won a silver medal in the IMAF World Championships there. We have fighters going out to represent Ireland now. We have people winning IBJJF medals in European levels. We've opened my own gym is open. I think it's like 2.5 years now. So this team is very young, and the Irish people love to fight. You know, so the waves keep coming, and There's a really, I think you're kind of a product of your environment as well when you come up as a fighter. So I think a lot of my fighters are going to get. I would be the first, UFC fighter, Irish UFC fighter, to go to the UFC, kind of get the experience, and then come back actually as a coach. So yeah. I think they're going to get a whole new experience attached to the skill set, because the mental aspect of it, I think even more now in fighting than anything. Is sports, everyone is on, they understand the mental aspect. And if you read through my book, I that's what we talk about. I'm very into the idea of, like, why I was off, why I was on, and how things have affected you. So I go into that really well, and I think my fighters are going to benefit from that, guys that come up through my club.
Yeah, shout out to your gym, it's SBG Dublin 24.
Yeah, Dublin 24. Dublin 24 is the postcode of my area. So where I come from is D24. So it's SBG D24.
Lovely. And any regrets about coming clean to the UFC, or there was nothing to be done because you had those injuries that needed fixing?
No, that's the situation is that I never really felt that what I have affects people in the sport. All right, my kind of idea was when I was very young, you read in the book, I had surgeries before this was even diagnosed. I had had like a bit of a crazy childhood. I fought and so I'd sparred, I've been sparring for many years. The thing about this is that when you Google it, it comes up like, do not do combat sports because hemophilia. Now, I'm not saying factor 13 is the same, but mine is extremely rare. So there's not that much known about it.
Yeah.
So for my safety, I'm not allowed to fight anymore. But then on the flip side, we have guys in the sport using PEDs and coming out only just coming out. TJ Dillashaw coming out again, talking about it, saying he sold his soul to the devil. What does the other guy get? What does the other guy get that's getting hit in the face, that's getting kicked? What the other guys that say maybe he fought on when he sold his soul to the devil maybe before? The guys that lost and they didn't get to move forward. And as I've just been speaking about your family and money and all of this stuff that comes into this, it's not about belts. It's not about fame for some people. Some people are trying to feed their family. And if I've heard Artem Lobov say it, if you are a supercharged athlete and then you inject yourself with EPO, you're at a different level then. Like, this is already a fit human being. This is not an average Joe taking a PED. So they get banned and they get to come back. And TJ Dillashaw is talking about fighting Floyd Mayweather. It's like, me? Really?
I couldn't agree with you more on that. Going back to the book, it was really nice to hear good words about Conor because he's obviously had a lot of bad press recently. You talk about him all the way through being a support to everything you've ever done. I saw on your Instagram that you gave him a copy of the book the other day. But a really touching story was the one where he retired when he was supposed to be doing the press conference for the second Nate Diaz fight, and he pulled out of that and retired, and it was around the time of your retirement, and he said to Dana that he would come and do the press conference if he'd let you have one more fight. What did that mean to you?
If anybody rises up from the bottom and you come up to the top, all right, you then have the aspect to be able to talk to a lot of people and to be able to influence how they go. Now, I know that the elections are on in England at the moment, and when it happens, when someone rises up from, say, a council estate, or someone rises up like Conor did, and they have this big aspect over a lot of people to be able to tell them how to vote, maybe tell them how to act or a style, John Lennon, all of these other people that go on in history, it suits people to make sure that person's not doesn't have the valuable name, you know what I mean? So I don't listen to the media, I don't buy into this stuff. To me, Conor, I know Conor personally. Conor is a big heart, an amazing human being, has always supported his team and through everything. Like, he supported every project I've probably ever done. And times when he was away with Mayweather, he was trying to see was the gym okay, and even in training, he would always take the time to help people. And that's the side of Conor I know, and the side of Conor I'll always be the one to show it towards, because he's an amazing fighter, an incredible athlete. Like, we are graced to kind of have him as this generation, if you think of it, because when it does go on, he will be the Ali's and the Bruce Lee's and all the way back, because he created a whole new style, a whole new generation, and that's what he has done. So the idea of the story that you're talking about.
Yeah.
Go again. Give me the story again.
It was when he said he would go to the press conference.
Yes.
Didn't want to go to in LA if Dana let you have one more fight.
And he didn't tell me that. So Conor didn't tell me that. I heard that off somebody else, that Conor had said that.
Yeah.
So to me, that was it. Wasn't Conor didn't say this is what I said. Conor was said that in his own time, and then someone said to me, "Did you know that Conor said I will go if you let Paddy have a fight?" So that shows the measure of a man. You know, he wasn't doing it for anything else.
He says that he's back fighting on January the 18th. Do you think we'll see him in there?
Oh, we know nothing.
It was worth a try, Paddy.
We know nothing.
I don't want to go on to this too much because it's been spoken about a lot in the press anyway, but I kind of thought from what I'd heard that the breakdown of your relationship with John was just about the keeping the SBG name and having to pay for it. But in the book, there's quite a few things leading up to that. Quite a lot of things. The changing room before the smoker fight, the original gym that you were trying to set up with him, and basically just not getting in touch with you in times of need. He has said to people that he's going to sort this out privately, I believe. Has he been in touch with you?
I haven't heard from John in, I don't know, probably apart from probably one or two times where we had to communicate about 2 years. So I just don't talk to John. We floated away. When you're a student, I think, and a coach, this is the way I've kind of explained it, is that when it starts off, you're one lane. So you're the one who's receiving from your coach and you're getting all this knowledge and receiving this wisdom and stuff like that. And then as it proceeds and your student comes up, I notice myself because I have students now, it can become like a two-way process then. So it passes both ways. And I don't know, sometimes if it comes to that way, that can be a little bit of friction. And I think maybe that's where they kind of divided in the path with us, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So and that kind of grew, and obviously the gym in the book, and people are reading about that. And then the idea, when I was kind of away, I had retired and I'd done my thing and I had built the gym was ready, and we were kind of processed with a fee, and it was like, no thanks. So we haven't talked since then after the ultra fix this in the screen, and it kind of hasn't, that's it. There's no, I don't know who has said it's been resolved privately or not. I'm just doing me over here, and that's what I'm going to continue doing. But I would have been asked a million questions without writing this book, without the book being out. The book's not about that story, it's about my story. But there would have been ways where I didn't know how to answer questions and stuff like that. So now, listen, the story is out, that's the timeline, and I think it's a fair account.
Yeah, and people need to read the book to truly appreciate why that would have hurt so much with everything that you did physically to help build his gym, and also with all the coaching and stuff that all of you put into it. But moving on to happier topics, you're now a politician, Paddy.
Don't say that. Don't say the P word. An activist.
I knew you'd hate that.
An activist.
I said it for a reaction. You're an elective representative of your local constituency.
Yes, yeah.
How does that feel?
Feels, I think getting elected is part of the idea of kind of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to break down the stigmas of like anybody can do anything. I live in a council estate. The council estates in Manchester, all over England. And they're all very similar. Really good working class people, good positive people, people go to work hard and stuff like that. And then sometimes a small number can bring down the name of that. And that's the only part that the media focus on and get. So I'm trying to change the idea and empower people to understand the vote. So there's a vote going on over there very soon. And at the moment, people in working class areas, the turnout is very low. So what we've got to try, and because people say, why do we bother? This is why. Because the people that are in power, they know how to vote, right? And if, say, in Ireland, this is a situation. So say there's a whole apple, half of the apple comes out to vote. 27% of it have it wrapped up. They know how they're going to vote. They're never going to change. That's the money in the country. And the rest of that apple, the rest of the people that actually give a shit are left fighting over them little crumb bits of it. And the other half of the apple, the big part, that's just off on its own now. That's the biggest party in a country. It's the part that doesn't vote. So if then people realise that they're actually the most powerful people in their country, they register to vote. It's easy to do. Go online. We see Stormzy had a campaign about it as well. Go out to vote. Because that's the reason why, say, homelessness in Ireland is so high. It's because our government benefit from renting buildings back to themselves through HAP schemes and rent allowance schemes. And listen, I know the system. this is why I should be in the council where I am, when I'm elected to, rather than sitting here screaming at the television. So, you know.
I love the stories of how you got people to vote, you know, going and knocking on their door. Didn't you get one guy out of bed?
Oh, loads. Loads. Get up and get out and vote. I was like, do you ever see Gangs of New York?
Yeah.
That's how you get people out to vote. They come in, turn the tables over, and you don't get them out to vote. But listen, people that don't vote are as equally as guilty and responsible for the problems that go on. We had a kid over here that was, there was a picture of him, and he's 5 years of age. His name is Sam, and you couldn't see his face, but he's eating his dinner off a bit of cardboard. Like, there's people outside the GPO feeding hundreds of people voluntarily every night over here. You would not believe the state of homelessness in Ireland, and it's created so developers can build. Like, to rent an apartment over here, 3-bedroom apartment would cost you €2,000 per month.
Yeah.
So, like, it's ridiculous. And I know it's in England as well. I know it's, but it's, the people that have the money, they go out and vote. The people that don't, we need to start getting together and realizing that we all need to go out and vote.
Yeah. And in an ideal world, would you stay at this local level looking after the people that you've grown up with? Or do you want to spread Paddy Houlihan's message to the whole of the country? Could we see you running for higher office?
I could be the president of Ireland. So we have the president over here, which you have the queen.
Yeah.
Not a fan of myself, but she's all right. So we have the president over here. So we're president there. There's a good president there, Michael D. Higgins. Doesn't speak up enough, in my opinion. He doesn't speak up when their government are terrible. Our leaders are the worst. They're like Boris, I don't know, minus half. So, that's what we're dealing with. So homelessness has rose every single month of this year, and they still won't sack the lad that looks after the housing. He's making more mistakes, you know. So what we need to do over here is we need to get people out, get them voting, and we can change this, you know. So and then I can run for president, and we could move on, you know, as me as president.
What year are we going to see that in?
You have to be 35 years of age. There's an age discrimination.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so I don't know whether that's changing it, but you have to be 35 years of age, so... if every ordinary job that half of the apple decided said, see that lad there that sometimes he speaks sense, we're going to make him, and I'll look after anybody's robbing, I'll be, listen, put that back.
Well, Paddy, I appreciate your time so much. The book is fantastic, it's inspirational. I knew you had a really tough childhood. There it is, everybody. I knew you had a very tough childhood, but reading it, I didn't want to spoil any more of it for people. It's such an inspirational story for everyone. I don't even think you need to be an MMA fan.
Oh, that's a big part. Yep. That's what loads of people have said. If you took the MMA out, it still could have been a story. So it's to get people to realise that we all come from all shapes and sizes, different backgrounds, and it's your mind is the only thing that can stop you between doing what you want to do and doing what you have to do, you know?
And the fact that when you've been at your lowest, the hooligan inside of you has woken up and not accepted defeat.
We have that voice in us. We all have it. You know, you just got to train them to be a positive.
I think I ignore mine.
Yeah. Sometimes mine would make me eat all the biscuits. There's two of them. There's a fire hooligan in me as well.
Well, it was amazing talking to you. Everybody, please go out and buy the book. You won't regret it. Paddy, you've been a bucket list guest of mine, and then reading the book, it was just nailed on that I had to get you on. So yes. I appreciate your time so much.
You get the book on Kindle, you get the book on Amazon, you can get the book
on audio.
The book, sorry, not audio yet, but we might do one in 2020 in my good Dublin accent.
My husband waits for the audio book, so I've got it on Kindle. I'm going to buy the book for my dad for Christmas. Lee will wait for the audio.
You're going to buy it off your dad and then rob it.
Yeah.
Good boy. Cheers.
Thanks so much, Paddy.
Look after yourself. Bye-bye.